welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? In folklore, it is an animated corpse that is believed to have been revived from the dead to haunt the living. It is derived from the old French word meaning the returning.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah, basically.
Tom Hardy?
Yeah. Yes. Just wanted to bring that up because we're recording this ahead of my trip to Okinawa, and also the largest typhoon of the season will coincide. So I may not return. I may be lost at sea. So I've left it in my will that you need to finish the editing for this episode.
Oh, great, great. That's not a gift.
So these may be my final words to the world.
So make them count.
Yes. Yeah, so that's happening this weekend in Okinawa. So it'll be fun to see. I'll have my third book for Citizen Spaceman, which is what I've been working on all week, getting that edited and printed and all that stuff. And I made a giant vinyl banner. So I have my name above my head. Yeah, I should have it behind me always.
You should, yeah.
Just so you know.
Come on, we live in the country where banners are common advertising practices. So you should be able to rig some kind of back banner or whatever. So you just constantly have this giant vinyl banner above your head at all times.
Yes.
Not great for doors to trains, but great for advertising.
Nice. This won't be posted until after I return. So as the schedule has been kind of slipping a little bit because I've been busy preparing for this, I expect this midweek next week, just before the next.
As long as we record it
once
a week, it's still a weekly thing.
That's true. It does exist, whether it's heard or not. So if a podcast is recorded and nobody hears it, that's okay. So anything for you this week?
What have
you
just been assaulting my ears with more Tamer Book 2.
All right. Two? You're right at the second.
Yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment. If you follow my Twitter, you'll see a picture I posted that said, I'm not proud that this is my iTunes library right now, and it's books 1 through 4.
Does the main character leave that weird world, so he just stays there?
Based on the cover images, I am guessing it's entirely on Planet Dinosaur. And I'm suspecting that a new hot alien babe gets added every book.
Ah, of course.
Because how could you keep things going otherwise?
Mm-hmm. Gotta introduce some new eye candy.
it's also problems, because it's always isn't that how anime harem shows go? It's hey, okay, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, new house guest. Things go into chaos, but things settle down again until the next house guest shows up and you wash, rinse, repeat ad nauseum.
Yes. So we'll pay attention to that.
Or not. I specifically put hashtags on this one so people can mute the thread if they don't want to see it. Yep.
That's very kind of you. The gift that keeps on giving would be the Feast of Legend, the Wendy's RPG.
So Salty Cast Part 2.
Yeah, right. I'll try to keep this. Just a brief mention. This is a little addendum to the last time, because I think this existed, but I couldn't find any sources for it. But there was an after party for the New York Comic Con, which happened the first weekend or four days, beginning of October. And there was an after party. The after party was called Heroes After Dark, powered by the New York Comic Con and fandom. And one of the official sponsors was Wendy's. And so at this after party that had some birthday party bar mitzvah DJs, this is New York and this really low quality talent and hosting. But there were physical copies of Feast of Legend.
And you said before they were hardback copies, not just printed out at Kinko's.
Yeah. Yeah, so they announced, I hadn't seen this before I saw all of the news. So the press release should have maybe hinted at that. At the New York Comic Con, Wendy's must have had a booth or somebody was distributing, and maybe even in the gift bag they give you or something. Right. They did physical copies and dice of this RPG. It exists in physical form. The interesting thing is, though, I looked on eBay. No one is selling it.
Really?
So that says a lot about who cares,
I guess it does, because we were talking about it before, and you mentioned that you didn't know if they were for sale, they were being given away. And I was about to say, well, they're for sale now, thinking specifically of eBay and how quickly collectible or kind of exclusive things usually get shifted to eBay. So I'm surprised that there are not copies of this on eBay. Maybe it's too soon?
Possibly, people haven't gotten home and gotten a chance to click some photos and put them online, but people do that really fast.
That's what my impression was,
So, I mean, there may just be zero demand.
Maybe. I don't know.
But the photos from this after party were just kind of the setup. There wasn't actually guests there, but they had a stage and they had larger than life size sculptures, like the style that Blizzard does for World of Warcraft, of the main characters, the Wendy Princess of the Realm and the
Frosty
Sorceress. Yeah, the icy sorceress. These are major. I mean, just to produce those and actually transport them and get the Teamsters to actually put them up on the stage, that's a piece of change. That's a considerable expense.
Kind of gets back to what we were talking about last week, where I guess, as you said, this is not an insignificant expense.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't know what Wendy's wants to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you kind of said last week, they almost don't really have anything to lose, I guess. Like they're not going to not going to hurt their business anymore right. by doing this. And I guess they only have something to gain from it, if that's anything at all.
Mm. Yeah.
What would it be? I don't know.
Yeah, if it gets their name out there a little bit more and people have a different association, it's like, oh, McDonald's and Burger King, those are for squares. Wendy's is for the the tabletop hipsters. Sure. I don't know.
But if you want to go for squares, go for White Castle, because their burgers are literally square.
Well, Wendy's too. Yeah, Wendy's has well,
them. I mean, yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah. So Wendy's left Japan about 5 years ago. So we've had like sporadically Wendy's.
They're back, but they've teamed up with First Kitchen. Oh, I don't think you can find a Wendy's on its own. It's always like a Wendy's First Kitchen kind of thing.
A co-branded. Yeah. So it's bigger. So I was just complaining about what they might have spent for that Critical Role live stream, but that's probably nothing compared to what they put into a booth and an event sponsorship at New York Comic Con. So, and think about if they would have just rolled out a nationwide campaign, you know, some stupid themed, like come up with some new mascot or some new character or some gimmick, you know, that would have, this budget probably would have been dwarfed by that. So this is kind of a, you know, an indie production compared to what fast food chains usually do.
Now, after recording the episode last week, that was kind of before I knew about most of what was going on with Critical Role. And I don't know the timing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Critical Role planned to do the whole time, but they kind of issued, in my opinion, a non-apology and then decided to donate the money to some kind of like farmer's aid thing. And I'm getting the specifics wrong. I don't know. I know people like Critical Role. I've watched like one episode and kind of couldn't hang with it. Regardless of what they intended to do, my feeling is the timing of it made it look like they only decided to donate after there was kind of, at least from what I saw, a vocal criticism of them taking sponsorship money from a corporation that's kind of crappy.
Yeah. That was the really surprising thing. They were just, this is just a sponsored live stream, just a obvious money grab on their end. So there must be some charity. There must be something involved. Of course, that being an afterthought. And it may just have been that that's not an easy thing to negotiate. So maybe Wendy's offered them that money and they're like, oh, okay, so we can do a charity. Like, well, what kind of charity?
I'm sure. I mean, they probably could not have done that, right? Like if they had said, yeah, we're going to donate to this thing that you kind of screw over your worker, so we're going to donate to this thing. I bet Wendy's would have gone,
Are we going to make that connection for us? Thanks.
But like, if that's the case, and if you were doing it to raise money for a charity, why would walking away from that money then have been a problem? Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like they decided to do it after the fact. Also, like with the audience they have, and I said this on Twitter, because that's where I say everything, they very easily could have done a charity live stream with pretty much any game.
Right.
To donate money to the same kind of nonprofit organization or whatever they donated it to. So that also makes me kind of feel like, this was an after the fact kind of thing. Mm. And to see some people try to spin it as a Robin Hood-esque, stealing from the corp to give to the people the corp screwed over. I'm like, was it though? Like, I don't know, but the optics that I see are that it was not.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they looked at that check and, we feel so dirty now, really? I mean, it was okay when we were just stealing people's money from Kickstarter, but now we're actually like in it.
Well, I don't know if I'll go that far. That ought to get us some hate comments. I don't know if they've stolen the money from Kickstarter. I guess the animated series is still going on. Mm. There's any number of things they could have done. And I guess it kind of gets into a further discussion of when you're as big as Critical Role is, whether you intend to be or not, you promote the things you put on your stream.
Mm, right.
And again, whether you intend to or not, you're kind of a voice of the hobby. And while I won't say you have a responsibility to do certain things, not doing them or doing things that are kind of harmful, whether you know it or not, you're not protected from criticism. And I think you very rightly should get criticized for doing things since you have this big of an audience. Like you're not just saying stuff into like a 200 follower Twitter account,
right?
You know, so what your words have weight and your actions have weight. And when you do something that is problematic, you should get called out.
Mm-hmm. And it's good. And it's good they had some sort of response, because that would have been a little scary if they're just like, hey, whatever, got to make that money.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, I kind of feel that would have been a bit more of an honest response.
Yeah.
Because the way to make an apology is to actually use the words I'm sorry or apologize in the thing you are apologizing for. Right? So, which leads me to an example of a good apology. I was looking at the Reclaimer tabletop role-playing game by Chad Walker. And it is a game of a game of climate crisis and eco-insurrection.
Ah.
So it's kind of not post-apocalyptic, but it's kind of like near future where, you know, corporations have completely screwed over the environment. And I think your team is kind of like these eco-insurrectionists.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason I'm bringing it up is the campaign originally got criticism because of how the tiers were structured.
Oh.
Everything was going to be digital. Mm-hmm. They're not going to produce a hard copy because going with the whole, you know, eco preservation thing, they're like, nope, we're doing digital PDF only to, you know, save on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they put up tiers. I think there were three different tiers where one tier you were donating $5 to, I think, like writers, editors, and proofreaders.
Mm-hmm.
Another tier you were donating $5 to layout artists. And I think another tier you were donating $5 to illustrators.
Mm.
And I understood the idea was it's going to function like a tip jar. And we want you to choose kind of, you know, who you're going to donate this money to for jobs that often get overlooked in the role-playing game kind of sector. But then I think people rightly pointed out you're pitting these three groups of people against themselves.
Right.
And you're forcing people to choose who they want to support, and mm-hmm. shouldn't you be kind of doing everybody? The person running the Kickstarter, I think, took that criticism,
mm-hmm.
put up a post that actually used the words apologize and sorry,
mm.
and said, you know, that wasn't our intention. We see now how that is the result of these tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Kickstarter does not let us change or delete right. these tiers once we started a campaign, but we've now changed things so that the any extra is going to go to these three groups equally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have, you know, pledged at a previous tier, please change your tier. So I thought, especially compared to the Critical Role Wendy's thing, where it's like, hey, here's someone who actually took feedback mm-hmm. and criticism, looked at it and said, oh yeah, we did kind of maybe mess up or mm. things went away that we didn't intend, and we're now addressing the problem and have fixed it.
Well, I wonder what their thinking was, kind of, you know, pitting those three. I mean, I it makes sense, because what's more important to you? You know, the editing, the polish on the text itself, mm. the layout and design, or the illustration, and kind of like basically asking people, but you could have done that in a poll.
I mean, yeah, but there's been any number of times where I've come up with an idea and then, mm-hmm. you know, kicked it out to people, and then they've pointed out stuff, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? That mm-hmm. is really bad. Like, there was one time I was trying to develop a game where it's a little simple kind of like matching card game where aliens were going to like abduct people,
mm-hmm.
and you scored points based on whether, you know, their clothes matched or whatever. You had like clothes, hairstyle, and something like jeans, whatever, matching colors. And I said to, like, because there's too many cis white guys in gaming, I'm going to make all the people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at it and took a step back and I said, you know what that is? That's just aliens abducting minorities. And whoa, that is a bad idea. Right. So I totally understand having an idea, intending mm-hmm. it to be one thing, and then through oversight or because you're too close to the project, you go, oh, we've missed this big right. glaring kind of problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of need people to say, hey, this doesn't work.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, and that is frustrating about Kickstarter. Once you've launched it, it's launched. So yeah, you're just going to have to say, okay, we can't really change this. So yeah please kind of work within.
Yeah, I said I wasn't going to do any more Kickstarter things, but now that they've changed the pledge structure, I'm going to have to look at Reclaimer again.
Mm. I like the term eco-insurrectionist. I don't know quite what that would be, but...
That's like the werewolf, you know, the Vampire the Masquerade, like mm-hmm. in, I think, original Werewolf, you were kind of eco-terrorist.
Oh, right, right. Mm-hmm. Going to see more of that, I'm sure.
Are we?
Are we? I don't know. There was something I saw on crowdfunding, and it was actually a Kickstarter that we mentioned previously, the Swords Fall.
Okay, yep.
Sourcebook by Brandon Dixon. He's now moved the development of the source material to Indiegogo.
Okay.
And what they're doing is an art booster. So this is the first art booster. It's vehicles and transports, so hover bikes, cybernetic horses, floating transports, telekinetic animals, and more. Ooh. Indiegogo is a little bit different. The structure from Kickstarter is, I guess it's more like Patreon. You can set goals, and it's not all or nothing. You can, when you reach a certain goal, you're promising something, but you get to keep, if you make $2, you get to keep those $2. Anything that's generated, you get to keep.
Okay.
So you can mark these goals and kind of mark what happens when the total gets to certain amounts. And you can either have it ongoing or have it run for a limited time. The structure is, it's a $1,000 goal is the first goal that was posted. And it's giving him the ability to fund two full color illustrations. The sketches and other behind the scenes work will be included in a PDF for everybody that backs it. And then for every $500 above the goal, another piece of art will be added. All the money from this Indiegogo campaign will go towards the artists. So this one is truly about the art. yeah, it's a little strange because I was hoping that we would see like the next step, like we'd see, you know, more expansion into the setting, or we would see a rule system, or just right. kind of saying this is rules agnostic, so apply whatever your favorite system is, and we're going to try to kind of give you some guidelines about how things would be run. So yeah, I don't know if this is a good sign or just I mean, because there were so many artists that would love to get $500 per illustration for working on a setting. And I don't know if this is, there's going to be an end to this. Like this will actually ever be completed. And that's a little, it depends on how they structure it. Because if they just keep doing boosters and keep doing, now we're doing vehicles, now we're doing cities, now we're doing, you know, classes right. or whatever. I thought this was promising when it was on Kickstarter, even though it was only an art setting. And now I'm not sure it's got motivation and direction.
Well, did they say what the art is going to be used for?
I think it's just you know, the inspiration for the setting. It's just going to be source, you know, it's going to be source material for the setting. So they don't specifically say, but they're just, yeah, they're funding art pieces and it's just going to be an ongoing thing. So I guess, you know, that is inspirational. It will be good if people are playing in the setting, but what is it? Like, what are right. the, you know, what are the kind of boundaries of it? And
art is something that is expensive mm-hmm. and rightly so, because people deserve to get paid kind of what they're worth. That's also, or at least for me, and I imagine other people, a hurdle to producing RPG content. Mm-hmm. Because in discussions I've had with people or seeing other people talk about stuff, especially on Twitter, people talking about like, oh, the DM's Guild and having a nice cover illustration, and people asking questions about, okay, how much does the art of a product bring you in, or how important is it? And for certain things, it is really important. And that's been, you know, a stumbling block for me, saying like, oh, I have an idea. I could do the layout and typography myself. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be enough. It's not going to look nice enough, or I don't think it's going to attract enough people without some kind of art. Talking to you as an illustrator, I'm just like, wow, okay, like that is how much commercial ready art costs. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot.
Mm, right.
So I kind of understand running a crowdfunding campaign to produce art. If it keeps, I don't know, if it keeps going, I don't know how I would feel. I would have to go and look at this to see if they kind of specify what the art would be used for.
Right. Yeah, I hope it's going to be leading to another book or some kind of support, and not just digital files. That was interesting, because it was a shift from the scale and the ambition of the Kickstarter project. So I'm hoping that this doesn't say bad things about where it's going or where it's headed. Definitely keep an eye on that. We'll put a link to that. Another interesting news thing that came up. This is a little old, and I'm not sure what this means. And I think people are kind of misinterpreting what this means. But okay. Marvel and Games Workshop Ooh. Announced that they're cooperating to make comics.
Ooh, so Captain America Warhammer 40K crossover, right? That's what that means.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah. So I've never been really impressed. There's been a lot of Warhammer comics, and they don't really capture. Yeah, they've all been kind of probably like British, you know, smaller publishers and stuff, and nothing's been that impressive. And comic art, unless it's really gorgeous and, you know, maybe just only digital painted art really gets across the scale and the grandeur and the kind of heavy, dense quality of that setting. And comics often don't do that, and especially if they just kind of are churning them out. They're just simple stories and things. I haven't read through any of the stories. Maybe the stories are okay, but the artwork has just turned me off so much. So I don't know if Marvel is going to do anything to correct that. I think it's going to be the same sort of, you know, mediocre looking stuff that doesn't have that grandeur, because compared to the digital art and the stuff that's produced just for book covers for 40K, comics have a heavy burden to actually, you know, match that kind of look and feel. I think the strange misinterpretation is people are like, oh, Games Workshop and Marvel are working together, so Marvel's going to see what a great property this is, and then they're going to start developing feature films, we're going to have the Warhammer extended universe, and like, yeah, that's not going to happen, and that's not what does. And I think the reception and just the popularity of these comics is going to be very unamazing. You know, I don't think the IP is strange, and I don't think it's going to cross over well into, you know, what people are reading comics for.
Interesting. I had seen something a week back or so about, oh, you know, Marvel now owns, or Disney now owns Warhammer 40K, what? Couldn't find anything on that. Now I know why people are saying that. Mm-hmm. And bringing it back to that Wendy's thing, I guess, well, Games Workshop is probably still the biggest miniatures producer and miniatures games manufacturer. They don't have, or my impression is, they don't have a lot of recognition outside of the gaming hobby.
Right.
Maybe even so, like, war gaming hobby. Like, not even, while there are tabletop role-playing games, I still think fewer people know about them than other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think this might kind of be like Wendy's putting out a tabletop RPG, where it's like, we don't really have anything to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, but Games Workshop probably could still go bankrupt. I mean, if done poorly, meaning they're not that big.
Right.
But they don't have that much to lose. And what's going to happen? Like, a few people who read Marvel comics are going to, like, pick these up, and a small percentage of them are going to pick up the wargaming hobby.
Right.
That's kind of a win for GW.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what happens if no one picks them up? Nothing, really, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened in the past previously. I think they exist digitally, but I haven't seen any, like, physical Warhammer comics for a while. And they kind of occasionally, like, sometimes they were sticking them into a White Dwarf and stuff. But it's just, nothing was very impressive. And I think just because they didn't get big names or big talent behind it, they just got the, you know, kind of standard, you know, workaday guys to crank out some of those titles. So it's not going to turn into anything. I don't think it's going to wake Disney up to the fact. And I think Disney is definitely the wrong company to bring the Warhammer universe.
Are they the wrong company, or, like, who else is there?
Well, I think anybody. I would rather have a low budget Warhammer than Disney, you know.
Then you get one movie like that Warzone movie.
Yeah.
Which,
Mutant Chronicles.
Yeah, Mutant Chronicles, which was not that good. Sorry.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, a lot of green screens. This seems to be, they've already done this with PC gaming, and now mobile gaming is, GW's been real liberal with that license. And so they're getting more people to know this brand. And there's a lot of people that only know 40K from the console games or PC games.
I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. You're absolutely right.
So maybe they're trying to, but I don't think they understand how dead comics are as a media. I mean, comic movies are popular, but comic books are in pretty steep decline. I mean,
maybe that's why they're able to do it, though.
No, that's true, because it's a less expensive venture now. But it just seems like their continued attempt to extend the brand and get a little bit more recognition and make it a little bit more mainstream. So then that would lead in the future to, you know, popularity on television or popularity in the movies. It just seems like a weird match, at this point. But
it does.
We'll see.
Hey, you got to do something different to be noticed. I mean, like, last year, who would have anticipated that Wendy's made an RPG? So a Warhammer 40K comic book put out by Marvel doesn't seem that far-fetched anymore.
That's true. Yeah, we're in... in the land of all possibilities.
We are in a post-Wendy's RPG world. I'm sorry.
That's right. I'm going to be thinking about where I was. Yeah, do you remember before there was a Wendy's RPG?
I wish I did, yeah.
Something that I wanted to kind of add to our weekly cast here is just kind of an update about upcoming things for, like, on the YouTube channel and in the regular podcast. So a couple of the things that we have coming up is both the podcast, so an audio version and a video version of our review of Chariot of the Gods.
Oh, cool.
And so we've got that, and also a debriefing. So after the session, we did kind of individual interviews with the players. And so we'll have an edited version of kind of people's reaction to the session. So hopefully all that will be online before the release November, early December of the actual game itself. So you get a little bit more detail about how this game was, you know, how it was on the table and if it's something you'd be interested in. So we'll try to get all of that going. That's quite a...
I'm looking forward to that, because I'm sure the way you edit it together is going to be awesome. I want to see all the little video clips together.
Oh, yeah. I'm really, so we just kind of did an interview with each of the players, asking them the same questions, and then we'll just kind of present it as a pastiche of everybody's answer to get an overall.
And I don't know what other people said.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
It'll be good. And some unboxings. So the Aeronautica Imperialis will be coming soon. And also I just got War Room, a Kickstarter, which War Room is Axis and Allies creator. He did his own independent version of it. So it's the big flattened world, you know, World War II, everybody playing a nation and just tiny little bits and all sorts of madness. I mean, it's just like Axis and Allies on steroids. Yeah, just a huge version of that. So that'll be fun to unbox. I just got the standard pledge, but there's a crazy deluxe one that has, like, you know,
the little wooden
sticks and everything, and a giant polyurethane. Yeah, so because people have set up entire gaming rooms for that one specific game, like they have, they've like expanded the board so it fits on a table, and they have all of these, like, custom pieces.
People cannot see me shaking my head in disbelief.
There's some real.
All those people have no kids.
Yes, right. That's true. Yeah, most of them. Well, a lot of World War II buffs are.
Yeah, I was going to say World War II buff. If you've got a room that you can dedicate to gaming, you're a boomer.
Right. Yeah. Keep an eye out for those on the channels. So that's both the podcast and the YouTube channel.
Cool.
Okay, so where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, as always, under a massive thread of Tamer Book 2. I'm going chapter by chapter this time.
Nice.
So like I said, it's hashtagged. If you don't want to see it, just use that Tamer 2 hashtag. Right.
And I'm still drawing a weekly cartoon. Abusecartoons.com is the website. And so every Sunday night, North American time, and Monday if you're in Asia. And I actually got some viewers from Taiwan last live stream, so it is much more compatible maybe with the Asian time zone. And you can follow that cartoon on Twitter at Abuse Cartoons, and Twitch and YouTube is where the live stream is. And if you'd like to follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands, and then the website, of course, idleredhands.com, so you can keep up with the podcast, any downloads that we have for specific games that we're playing. If you'd like to support the podcast and get involved, Idle Red Hands is on Patreon at patreon.com/idleredhands. So that's it for this week.
Yeah.
All right.
And if we don't show up next week, it's that typhoon.
Right. So yeah, if you hear a single voice next week and somebody that was frustrated with editing this episode, you will know we're down a host. All right. So we'll be back again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.